Welcome back for another deep dive with us. Today, we're taking a look at something that can really mess with even the most experienced pilots up there.
Oh, yeah.
Spatial disorientation.
Absolutely.
We've got some fascinating aviation training materials to sort of guide our conversation today.
Right.
And of course, I'm joined by our expert to help break it all down.
Happy to be here.
So, our mission today, should we choose to accept it, is to really understand this phenomenon.
Right.
How it tricks our senses.
Yeah.
And what we can maybe do to avoid, you know, those consequences.
It's a really fascinating area where physiology and psychology really come together.
Yeah.
Especially when you think about, you know, the high stakes of aviation.
Exactly. Yeah. Right. If your brain is misinterpreting things when you're, you know, thousands of feet in the air, that's
right.
That's not a good situation.
Not at all.
So let's start with the basics.
Okay.
What exactly is spatial disorientation?
Well, at its core, you know, it's really a mismatch between what your senses tell you about your body's position and movement versus what's actually happening.
So like a disconnect.
Exactly.
Between what you feel and what's really going on.
Yeah, you might feel like you're climbing when you're descending, or you might feel like you're tilted when you're flying straight and level.
Oh, wow. So it's almost like your brain is working with like bad data, like a bad internet connection or something.
Yeah.
And it's making decisions.
Exactly.
Based on that.
Yeah. And the thing is, our brains are wired to trust our senses.
Yeah.
So when they conflict, it creates this very powerful illusion that's tough to overcome.
Yeah. It must be hard to like override those senses.
It is.
And, you know, especially when you're, you know, up in the air in a fast moving plane.
Right.
It's not like you can just stop and like think about it for a minute.
Exactly.
You have to react.
You do.
And our sources mentioned that it's actually a leading cause of aviation accidents. A really significant percentage.
Yeah.
With a fatality rate as high as 38%, which is...
That's scary.
That's incredibly scary.
Yeah.
And there are even different types of spatial disorientation.
There are.
Like categories.
Absolutely. Yeah. Let's imagine a pilot's flying at night. Limited visibility.
Okay.
And they enter a gradual turn without even realizing it.
Okay.
Their inner ear adapts to this new sensation, so they no longer feel the turn. But when they try to level the plane out, their senses tell them that they're actually turning in the opposite direction.
In the opposite direction.
Yeah.
Oh, and this is a classic example of what we call the leans.
So they physically feel like they're leaning. Even though the plane is level.
That's right.
That is so bizarre.
It can be incredibly disorienting.
Yeah.
And, you know, the natural reaction is to try and correct that leaning sensation, which can actually put the aircraft into a dangerous bank.
Right, because you're overcorrecting.
Exactly. You're trying to fix something that's not actually happening.
You got it.
Okay. And that's considered like a type one?
Exactly. This is what we call type one spatial disorientation.
Okay.
Where the pilot isn't even aware they're disoriented.
Right. They just think that's reality.
Absolutely.
And are there other types?
There are, yeah. So we've got type two.
Okay.
Where the pilot actually knows they're disoriented.
Uh-huh.
But they can still potentially correct it.
Okay.
A classic example here would be the graveyard spin.
Never heard of that.
Where a pilot recovers from a spin, but their inner ear still senses that rotation.
Oh, so it's like a delayed reaction.
Kind of, yeah.
Okay.
So they might re-enter the spin thinking they're actually correcting.
Oh, wow. So it's like a double whammy.
Exactly.
Like you're fixing it, but you're actually making it worse.
That's right.
Okay. Man, these are intense.
They are.
I'm sensing a theme here, though.
What?
That these illusions, they really play on our instincts. Like they make us react in a way that, you know, is actually not helpful.
Yeah, our brains are trying to help us, but they're giving us bad information.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Okay, and is there a type three or is that?
There's a type three.
Okay.
And this one is the most severe.
Okay.
It's completely incapacitating.
Oh, wow.
This is where the disorientation is so overwhelming. The pilot can't recover even if they know what's happening.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. A dramatic example is the Coriolis illusion.
Okay.
You move your head in a turning aircraft.
Okay.
It can create this sensation of rolling, pitching, and yawing all at the same time.
So you're flying along, you turn your head to check the instruments or something.
Great.
And suddenly,
The world's spinning.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Yeah, that does not sound good. It's a wild ride.
Okay, so we've got these three types. But to understand why these illusions even occur in the first place.
Right. We kind of need to talk about how our brains even make sense of where we are in space to begin with.
Yeah.
Like, how do we normally know which way is up?
Right. And it all boils down to this interplay between three sensory systems.
Okay.
Vision, our vestibular system, and then our proprioceptive senses.
So the sensory trio.
Exactly.
Love it. Our sources talk about this too.
Yeah.
Vision is obviously key. I mean, it's how we see the world around us.
It is, but it's not just seeing the objects, it's our brains using those visual cues to judge distance, depth, motion.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah,
Okay.
this is especially true for pilots during critical phases of flight, like
Right,
landing.
where precision is so
Yeah,
important. And
absolutely.
then we've got the vestibular system, which I always forget what that is, but I think it's our inner ear.
That's right, it lives in the inner ear.
And it's all about balance, right?
Exactly. It helps us keep our balance, detects changes in motion. It's got these tiny structures that are sensing acceleration, both linear and angular. So when we accelerate, decelerate, turn, tilt, the vestibular system sends signals to our brain.
Oh, wow. So it's like constantly monitoring all
Nice.
those little changes.
Yeah.
Interesting. Okay. And then finally, we've got proprioception, which I always think of as like our body sense.
It's a great way to put it. Yeah. It's like the network of nerves in our muscles and joints that give us feedback about our body's position, movement. You know, even with your eyes closed, you can still sense where your arms and legs are. That's
Yeah.
proprioception.
That's wild. Okay. So we've got these three systems. Vision, vestibular,
Right.
proprioceptive,
Yeah.
all feeding information to our brain,
Uh-huh.
usually working together pretty seamlessly.
Right.
But what happens when they disagree?
That's when the trouble starts, right?
Oh.
When there's a mismatch between those sensory inputs, it's called sensory mismatch. Our
Okay.
brain gets tricked.
So if our eyes are telling us one thing, our inner ear is telling us something else,
Right.
our muscles are saying a third thing, poor
Exactly.
brain is like,
What's going on?
what is happening?
Yeah.
No wonder we end up with these really weird perceptions
Exactly.
of, you know, where we are and which way is up.
You got it. And in the next part of our deep dive,
Okay.
we're going to take a look at how these mismatches actually create specific illusions.
Awesome.
Yeah, starting with visual illusions.
Can't wait.
These can really wreak havoc on a pilot's perception.
I bet.
Yeah.
Welcome back to the show. You know, we were just talking about how these sensory systems work together
Right.
to help us figure out where we are in space.
Right.
But it's got me thinking, if they're usually so good at this, why are pilots so susceptible to these illusions in the first place?
Well, you know, flying kind of puts our senses into situations that they weren't really designed for.
Yeah, that's true.
On the ground, gravity's always there. It's
Yeah.
like a constant reference point.
Right.
But when you're up in the air,
Yeah.
it's three
Right.
dimensions, changing speeds,
Wow.
G-forces, things our bodies aren't really used to.
Yeah, we're land mammals,
We are.
not really designed for flight. So it's like we're pushing these systems to their limits,
Yeah.
making them more prone to errors.
Exactly.
And that sort of brings us to the visual illusions,
Right.
which are some of the most common and dangerous.
They are.
And, you know, we were talking about how pilots rely so heavily on vision,
Especially when landing.
especially during landing.
Yeah.
Our training materials mentioned a few that I thought were really interesting.
Yeah.
One was the black hole approach illusion.
Right.
This happens at night
Uh-huh.
when you're approaching a brightly lit runway,
Yes.
but there's no other visual cues around.
Right. So it's like the runway is floating in this void,
Yeah.
and it creates this illusion that you're higher than you actually are.
Oh, wow.
And this can cause pilots to make a dangerously steep descent.
So they think they have more room to maneuver than they actually do.
Exactly. There have been accidents
Yeah.
attributed to this illusion.
And it's amazing how, like, just a simple lack of visual references
It is.
could just have such a huge impact on perception.
Absolutely.
Another one that caught my eye was the false horizon illusion,
Oh, yeah, interesting one.
where our brains are always trying to find that horizontal reference point.
They are. They want that horizon.
Right.
But in flight, you know, sometimes that reference point might be a banked cloud or even a sloping layer of fog.
So the pilot thinks they're flying level,
Right.
but they're actually in a bank.
Precisely.
Wow. And if they're not paying attention to those instruments, it
Right.
could be a real problem.
It could lead to a very dangerous situation.
Okay, so we've got these visual illusions,
Right.
but we talked earlier about the lens
Yeah.
and the Coriolis illusion.
Right.
Both of those are related to the inner ear,
That's
the
right.
vestibular system. Can we dig into those a little bit more?
We can, yeah. Let's start with the lens.
Okay.
Imagine you're driving in your car, making a gradual turn.
Okay.
You feel that sideways force, but then after a while, your body kind of adapts.
Right. You get used to it.
Exactly, and you don't feel it as much.
Yeah.
Similar thing happens in an aircraft.
Okay.
During a prolonged turn, our inner ear gets used to that sensation of turning.
Uh-huh.
And it stops sending strong signals to the brain.
Okay, so then when the pilot tries to level out,
right,
it's like that disconnect again.
Exactly.
Their inner ear is expecting one thing,
right,
and then it gets something else.
Yeah. And the brain thinks the plane is turning in the opposite direction.
Oh, wow.
Even though it's flying straight and level.
Okay.
And this can lead to that unintentional bank.
Right.
As the pilot tries to correct the feeling.
It's like our brains are always trying to predict what's going to happen next.
Right.
Based on what's happened before.
Right.
When that prediction is wrong, it just messes everything up.
It creates that strange feeling.
Yeah. Okay, now the Coriolis illusion.
Yeah. This one's a little bit more complex.
Yeah.
Often described as the most disorienting experience a pilot can have.
Oh, wow.
It happens when you move your head in a turning aircraft.
Okay.
And this triggers multiple semicircular canals in your inner ear at the same time.
Okay.
So let's say you're in a banked turn and then you tilt your head down to check your instruments.
Okay.
That sends a bunch of confusing signals to your brain.
Oh, gosh.
And you might suddenly feel like you're rolling, pitching, and yawing all at the same time.
All at the same time.
Yeah.
Oh, man, that sounds really bad.
It can be incredibly overwhelming.
Yeah, sensory overload for sure.
Exactly.
Okay, so we've got the visual illusions. We've got the inner ear stuff.
Right.
What about proprioception? We haven't talked too much about that.
We haven't.
I'm wondering how that plays into all of this.
Yeah, it's definitely more subtle than the other senses, but it can still add to that confusion.
Okay.
Proprioceptive illusions are mainly related to G forces.
Oh, interesting.
Those forces we feel when we accelerate and decelerate.
Right, like when you're pushed back in your seat during takeoff.
Exactly, or when you feel heavier in a steep turn.
Right.
For example, during rapid acceleration, a pilot might feel like they're climbing, even though they're maintaining a level altitude.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so their muscles and joints are telling them one thing.
Okay.
But their other senses might be saying something else.
Right. So another sensory mismatch.
Exactly.
Adding to the disorientation.
Right.
Man, we've covered a lot.
We have.
It seems like there's no escape from these illusions.
Well, don't worry. It's not all doom and gloom. While we are susceptible.
Okay, good.
There are things we can do to mitigate the risks.
Oh, so good. I was hoping you'd say that.
And we'll explore those in the final part of our deep dive.
Welcome back to our deep dive on spatial disorientation. It's clear that our senses can be tricked pretty easily.
They can, leading to, you know, some dicey situations up there.
Right, especially for pilots.
Especially for pilots, yeah. But now that we know all this, what can we actually do to fight back against these illusions? It feels a little bit like a losing battle.
Well, it's not really about eliminating the risk completely, because that's just not possible.
Right.
It's more about understanding it.
Okay.
You know, like knowing your enemy, so you can develop strategies to minimize the danger.
Okay, so knowledge is power.
Exactly.
Where do we even begin?
One of the most important things is prevention.
Okay.
And for pilots, this means, you know, being aware of the conditions that make spatial disorientation more likely.
Okay.
So things like flying at night, flying in fog, over featureless terrain.
Right, where you don't have a lot of those visual cues.
Exactly.
To help you orient yourself.
Yeah. Those are all red flags. It's about having that heightened sense of awareness.
Yeah. Like almost like a mental checklist.
Right.
Before you even take off, you know?
Exactly. Okay. I'm flying at night. I need to be extra careful.
Yeah. And it also means paying attention to your physical state.
Oh, right.
Because fatigue, illness, even certain medications can make us more susceptible.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Our sources really emphasize the importance of instrument training.
Yeah.
For pilots. Can you talk a bit about why that's so crucial?
Yeah, absolutely. Because in those moments, when your senses are telling you one thing,
right,
your instruments are telling you something completely different,
yeah,
you have to trust the instrument.
Yeah, it's like ignoring what your body's telling you.
It is.
Which is so counterintuitive.
It's really hard, but it's essential.
Yeah.
And that's why pilots spend so much time practicing instrument flying.
Right, so it becomes second nature.
Exactly.
And I imagine having two pilots in the cockpit is a huge help, too.
Oh, absolutely. It's like having a second set of eyes.
Yeah.
A second brain to cross-check what you're experiencing.
Right, so if one pilot's starting to feel disoriented, the other one can step in and be like, hey.
Something's not right.
Yeah.
Let me take over for a minute.
Yeah. Teamwork makes the dream work.
It does.
Up there in the sky. It sounds like communication's key, too.
It is.
Like being able to actually articulate what you're feeling.
Yeah, even if it sounds strange.
Even if it sounds crazy,
Right.
yeah, could be the difference between, a safe flight
Absolutely.
and a real problem. So let's say a pilot is flying solo
Okay.
and they start experiencing those symptoms, those feelings of disorientation.
Yeah.
What should they do? Like right then and there in the moment.
The most important thing is to recognize it's happening.
Yeah.
Don't ignore it. Don't try to fight it.
Right.
Just accept, okay, my senses are playing tricks on me,
Yeah.
and immediately go to your instruments.
Okay, so focus on those external tools
Exactly.
rather than your own internal feelings.
Right. It takes training and mental discipline, but it can be life-saving.
Yeah, I mean, in that situation,
Yeah.
I imagine it's really tough.
It is, but it can be done. Just focus on those instruments.
Yeah.
Fly the plane.
Stay calm.
Exactly.
And if possible, communicate.
Yes. Communicate with air traffic control.
Yeah.
They can provide guidance,
Yeah.
support to get you back on track.
This whole deep dive has been really fascinating.
It is a fascinating topic.
I mean, it's complex. There's so much to unpack here.
There is.
But it's not limited to aviation, is it?
Not at all.
This whole idea of spatial disorientation.
Anyone who goes into unusual environments.
Divers, astronauts,
Exactly.
even someone just driving through really thick fog.
Right. Anyone can experience these kinds of illusions.
So the things we've talked about today,
Yeah.
understanding how our senses can be fooled,
Right.
knowing the risks, having those backup systems in place, it's all relevant in everyday life.
Absolutely. It's about recognizing that our senses aren't perfect.
Right. They can be flawed.
They could be flawed.
And we need to be aware of that.
We
I
do.
think that's a great takeaway.
Yeah.
Just being aware that these illusions exist,
Right.
knowing how they work,
Yeah.
knowing what to do if you encounter them,
Exactly.
that's so powerful. And, maybe even more importantly,
Yeah.
it's about that healthy skepticism of our own
I
perceptions.
agree.
Like just because something feels real
Right.
doesn't necessarily mean it is.
That's a great point.
So yeah, next time you're in a situation and your senses are giving you mixed signals,
Yeah.
take a moment to pause,
No.
assess.
Right. Trust but verify.
Trust but verify.
Yeah.
I love that. Well, on that note, thanks
Okay.
for joining us for this deep dive on spatial disorientation.
My pleasure.
Until next time.
We're here at Menards Bank Sale, asking shoppers what they're putting in the bag to get 15% off.
Paint,
batteries,
tools,
toilet paper,
extension cords, grocery items,
hardware for my cabinets,
snack items, crackers, and some canned goods stuff,
shop vac supplies,
toothpaste, cereal, coffee, dog treats. I've got a lot of stuff to grab.
The list goes on, but the sale ends January 24th. Hurry in for Menards 15% off bag sale. See store for complete details.
Save big.